In the same way as stock options were introduced as derivatives on the stock market, options can also be generalized for credit products such as bonds and swaps. So an option will give its holder the right to buy or to sell a bond or a swap for a predetermined price, which is the strike price at the expiry time. Caps and floors are two examples which allow their holders to switch from the spot to a fixed interest rate. So you may say it's almost the same as a swap. It is, except that here the holder has the right and no obligation to do this change from a spot to the fixed rate. A cap is a collection of caplets and will acquire a value if the spot rate exceeds the strike rate. This is, for example, useful if you have to service a loan and you would like to ensure yourself that you will not have to pay more than a certain amount, setting kind of a roof to the payments, even if the interest rate increases above the level you can afford. So you will buy a cap which will acquire a value to compensate for the losses you will make if the rate becomes too large. A floor, on the contrary, can be defined as a collection of floorlets which coincide with the accrual periods again and will acquire a value if the spot rate goes below a certain strike rate. So it is, in fact, exactly the opposite behavior, making sure that you pay minimum interest rate. So this is why it's called a floor. Another type of option is the option derived from the swap, which is then called a swaption, and it gives its holder the right to enter a swap. A payer swaption acquires a value if the settlement rate or the spot rate exceeds the strike rate. And just the opposite is true for the seller swaption. In principle, there is no difficulties in generalizing these options and also the more exotic products we've seen for the stock market. And this is why the credit derivatives are growing very fast. In fact, the credit derivative market had more than $2 trillion of outstanding products in 2002, which shows that there is a lot of risk transfer going on in the form of options. Finally, let's turn to a hybrid type of product, which is the convertible bond. In principle, a convertible bond looks like a regular bond, which pays coupons at the end of every period, except that at the end of the contract, when the convertible bond reaches maturity, the holder has the right to convert the principal into shares. So this will reduce, in fact, the cost of rising credit for companies instead of returning the value of the loan, they will return shares. Of course, if the convertible bond holder chooses to do so. So what is the terminal payoff of such a convertible bond? In fact, it is simply the maximum between the principal, which is the amount of the loan, and the amount of shares, the value of the amount of shares agreed upon in the convertible bond. The valuation of such a product, however, is relatively complicated since it involves now two random variables, the spot rate, which dictates basically the price of the bond or the spot rate on the market, and the value of the share, which also is a random variable. And both of them, the spot rate and the underlying share value, are two quantities which are imperfectly correlated. Therefore, you need now a model which takes into account two dimensions in the changes, the random changes of the product value, and we'll see that this entails quite a sophisticated modeling when you try to find what is the value before the convertible bond expires. Before we finish this section on a variety of securities, let us turn to ways which can be used to analyze the sensitivity of a portfolio in terms of hedging parameters. Hedging consists very much in trying to find out first what are the main factors which could affect the value of your portfolio. So you try to find which holdings will have the biggest impact, if they change in value, on the total value of your portfolio. Now, if you assume that you're nearly in equilibrium, and you assume that all these parameters which you can imagine are yet small, you could do a Taylor expansion mathematically to the leading order terms. And then you can define what are the size of each of these terms in terms of Greek letters. Delta, for example, is used to measure the sensitivity of the portfolio to changes in the value of individual assets. So you have a delta for each of the assets included in your portfolio. This is usually the biggest component in your expansion, so it's the biggest effect on your portfolio, and is usually minimized in hedging strategies. And if you minimize the delta, this hedging strategy is then usually called delta hedging. If you minimize this delta, then by choice, this will be small, and therefore you will need to analyze the higher order term, which is called gamma, which measures the sensitivity of your portfolio to kind of a curvature. Another parameter is the vega, which is actually not a Greek letter, which measures the sensitivity of your portfolio to changes in the volatility for each of the underlying asset. Theta measures the sensitivity of your portfolio when you have an evolution in time. You will see now in the coming chapters that as you approach the expiry time of options, the options will change sometimes very quickly in value, and therefore you may have very rapid changes in the value of your portfolio as well as you reach the expiry time of options. Rho is another parameter which measures the sensitivity of your portfolio to the spot price, the spot rate. So you can try to define what are the main factors in your portfolio and try to minimize all these factors to try to avoid risk. Now, as you know, hedging does not mean that you want to avoid all the risks. Simply you want to try to take the risk you desire, and therefore you will try first to monitor each of these quantities to try to find out how large they are approximately, and to set an upper bound on the potential losses. So hedging is in fact just a way to make sure that you don't lose your shirt.